Alrighty then, what episode are we on? 50?
We are on episode 50, a number with a zero in it. I like numbers with zeros in it.
Alright, well, you're just a base 10 type of guy.
What would you prefer to me to be, hexadecimal? Our next episode will be 5A? Or how about 4F?
No.
Okay, so we're not going to start numbering episodes in hexadecimal.
If we were to do that, then our next episode would be episode 3-3.
Okay, well, we've already had a 3-3.
We can always do octal, and then it'll be episode 063.
How about binary?
Crap. I can't do that in my head.
Okay. Don't worry about it.
063 would be 0011-0011.
Okay, would you like to do the opener for episode 0011-0011?
Oh, no, that's the next episode. This episode is episode 0011-0010.
Oh, excuse me. Would you like to do the opener?
Sure. Welcome to episode 0011-0010 of Android Buffet. For you base 10 type folks, that is episode 50 or 50 if you're teaching your kid to count. I am Jeremiah Jones. This is Android Buffet, and I am joined as ever by my intrepid co-host. I'm joined by my intrepid co-host, the Guru himself. Guru, what's up, man?
Howdy. Or should I say my howdy in a more south of the border type howdy, because I could try.
Dude, you're a Yankee. Don't even try.
Okay, so my attempt to be southern would just be met with derision.
Well, only because it would be considered to be condescending.
Okay.
And you know, if there's anything we southerners don't like, it's to be condescended to.
You'd rather be condescending than be condescended. Okay, I don't know. I've been condescended to and condescending, and I suppose I've been somewhere in between at some point.
Well, you know what to say. It's better to be pissed off than pissed on.
I've been both. I get pissed on regularly. That's why I make the big bucks.
I knew you New Yorkers were strange.
Yeah, well, anyway, so maybe we should add a plus to the end of that long number sequence that you just put in.
Are we, whoa, plus? I've heard plus before. Is that some magical word?
Well,
is there maybe even a product that would be called plus? Yes, is that what you're discussing?
Yes, Google launched their new social networking platform, Google Plus.
Have you tried it?
Do you have an invite?
I don't have an invite.
I don't have an invite either. No one wants to be my friend on Google.
Well, we've seen how active I am in social media, so.
Yeah, well, I wanted to try the darn thing. I didn't want to. Give me a time-limited invite.
Apparently,
invite me for 5 hours.
I have seen Google Plus invites available on eBay.
I'm not paying for a Google invite. If you people want to hear about Google Plus, you'll either have to wait until one of us gets a chance to try it, or why don't you write in? If you have a Google Plus invite, I'm not asking you for one, but give us a review of the product. Tell us what you think, because we're not able to tell you what we think, at least other than watching what other people have said about it. It looks interesting, though. There is an Android app. It seems to be very privacy-oriented. Apparently, Google's learned from Buzz, which it got a lot of slaps about. And it has a lot of features, including video chat, text chat, all sorts of other things. And the ability to say that you do not want people in a certain group of people to know what people in a different group of people know about you. Which works really well in my life.
And even...
So I could have my guru circle and my non-guru circle.
Yes, you could.
Well, I was trying to explain this to somebody. When I come home from work, I cannot go on a social network if anybody I work with is on that social network and say publicly, I hated work today. But I could tell all the people who, if I separate out the people who I work with from the people who are friendly with me, I can say, I hated work today. I wouldn't say that, but it seems like a good example.
Oh, okay. Because you never know, because people from work might be listening to this podcast.
Isn't that the reason I don't give out my name? I don't want people from work to know what I talk about. If they want to hear me talk about work, they're welcome to. They can hear me talk about work 41 hours a week.
They probably do hear you talk about work at work.
Yes. Anyway, let's see. It seems like it's going to be an interesting challenger. And there are rumors that they're going to integrate Picasa and Blogger in there, and they're going to essentially get rid of those products in terms of their own brand names and just merge them into the overall Plus platform product. So Google Picasa will now be Google Photo.
Well, they certainly do have all of the parts to make for a very persuasive social network.
Yes. I'm still trying to figure out social networking. I understand Twitter, although I have issues with Twitter at times also, but if there's anybody who might be able to figure it out due to the large amount of money they may throw at the problem, it may be Google.
That's true.
And I am eager because to be on there, only because it seems like all the people on there are techie and nerdy people, and I fit in with that group. You know, those are my peeps. I got that slang expression right.
I think peeps. You did.
You know, my homies.
Oh, stop now.
Okay, well, I'm not hip in any manner, shape, or form.
Although you do have two of them.
Well, you don't know. I could have had one of them replaced.
You'd still have two.
Yes, but one of them wouldn't be mine.
It would be yours now.
Oh, okay. I have two hips, and they're both original equipment. I believe in OEM parts, if at all possible.
I'm there with you.
Yes. Moving along, I wanted to follow up on the 20 gigabytes of music I've been uploading to Muzone.
So, in a week, have you been able to upload 20 gigabytes?
Well, it's actually been less than a week. I started last Thursday.
Ooh. And?
It's done.
All right.
I have 4,500 and change songs up at Muzone. Now, they've actually been very nice. They responded to my feedback. They are going to incorporate support. Apparently, they were planning on it anyway. They told me within the next few weeks for the album artist tag.
Yeah.
Which really annoys me in terms of handling, and you'd really think that somebody would have addressed this a long time ago. What to do if you have a compilation album that has multiple artists on it?
You say various.
Well, yes, but that means you can't identify on the track itself who actually performed it. So there's a secondary tag in addition to artist called album artist, which if it's filled in, would indicate that essentially you have one album with multiple artists.
Okay.
And they are going to support that. But for now, it means that I have these compilation albums that every track looks like a different album because it has a different artist to Muzone. And that happens with a lot of music players that don't support that tag. I believe it was the people at Apple who came up with that tag, by the way.
Yay.
Well, it should have been an official thing. Anyway, ID3 issues aside, it's working very nicely. It streams very nicely. And I only had to pay once. They also responded to my feedback that their app needs a bigger button.
Or bigger buttons.
Yes. Well, specifically, their play pause button is tiny.
Infinitesimal, I believe you said.
Yes. I need a big button. So they have said that they agree with me that a big button is a good idea and will add it to their feature list.
Cool. Size matters.
Yes. Some point in the future. I don't know when that some point may be, but they at least have told me that they think it's a good idea. I would accept if they told me they thought it was a bad idea and would never do it. So now I just have to wait for the someday in the future when they do it. Yay. Yes. And let's see, what else is new? In certain interesting cellular news, apparently, there was an article in the EU, 40 gigabytes of data would cost the same as a house. So the EU is set to impose new caps on mobile roaming.
The EU.
Yes. Are you telling me we shouldn't be a worldwide podcast and occasionally talk about people outside the United States?
No, I wasn't headed there at all.
Well, didn't you see on Twitter, I was...
Instituting limits is telling private companies what their caps should be?
No, they're saying that you can't charge an insane amount for overage that would be significantly different than what you would charge on a limit for home usage. So the idea being that if the person was connected to their service provider at home, which in many cases the same company or division of the same company as their mobile provider, it can't cost as much as a house to get 40 gigabytes of data mobily and part of your monthly service charge at home for less than, let's say, 40 euro. That is a ridiculous difference.
Okay.
So the EU is saying that's ridiculous. You can charge more for overage charges on mobile, but they have to be comparable to what you would charge for an overage charge at a home.
I don't know. Apparently, their proposed cap rate would make 40 gigabytes only cost a car. So it would be 18,000 euro instead of 240,000 euro, which, granted, is better. More sane. Well, more sane if, wow, that's a sliding scale.
Yes. So essentially all this proves, and again, in terms of the discussion, is that the price of overages on mobile is nuts and not in line with what most sane people feel is reasonable.
I don't know if I'm a sane person, but I would certainly not consider paying $240,000 for 40 gig.
Exactly. So how can a company justify that?
Wow.
The only possible way that a company can justify that is because they are trying to catch you unawares, and they don't count on you ever getting to 40 gigabytes. They're trying to get you a gigabyte here and a gigabyte there, which will cost several hundred dollars or several thousand. So essentially the idea is that they are being unfair by saying that 40 gigabytes, which is an amount that somebody could in theory use in a month, if they are watching, let's say, Netflix, would cost as much as a house. Again, it's a matter of reasonableness.
And not even, you know, a house. A really nice house.
Okay.
Wow, 240 euro. That's a lot.
On an unrelated note, please monitor your wireless bill.
Right?
Yeah. That's why in the United States, I believe there was some sort of discussion of requiring carriers to send you some sort of notification or to offer you the option of cutting you off rather than allowing you to go to on an overage. Personally, if that's the cost of an overage, I'd rather just be cut off if I reach my limit and have to call them. Anyway, moving along, Android could reach 1 million daily activations in 2011.
And that's because we are at what right now?
About 500,000.
Yeah, that's the last number I heard was 500,000 a day.
Yes, so essentially they're calculating that if the upward trend continues, it could be 1 million by the end of the year.
Yeah, but, I mean, at what point do you just saturate the market?
I think we're almost there.
Yeah, so I don't think the upward trend can continue for much longer. Although,
did I tell you that the Spin Doctor actually just bought a Droid X2?
No. Well, yes, you did, but I'm on the show now, so I'm going to pretend that you didn't. He did he?
Yes, he is the primary writer for StockSpinoffs.com, so I happened to run into him, so I decided it was time to hone my in-need-of-improvement interviewing skills, so I had a few words with him, which I'm going to put at the end of the show, where he briefly talks about how excited he is about his new Droid X2. And about 2 hours later, he sent me a frantic email because he'd succeeded in bricking his new Droid X2. About 2 hours after I left him physically, after showing him how to turn off notification sounds, which were driving him crazy.
Well, he just climbed right on up the ladder, didn't he?
Yes, he's very excited about getting it replaced. I have to drop him a line. He's been a bit slow on email since this weekend when I ran into him. As if he didn't have a working mobile device.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, moving along. Google pulled access from Taiwan for paid apps after Taiwan found the Android Market 15-minute refund window to be unlawful.
Maybe there's a hint.
Yes. The Android Web Market, this is happened a while ago, but I did forget to mention it. It's now showing user rating details.
Cool.
Yes. So it will break down exactly how the ratings were on your individual app.
Good.
In other news, a report indicates that Android phones suffer the highest hardware failure rate at 14% compared to 9% for Windows Phone, 8% for iPhone, and 3.7% for BlackBerry. What do you think about that, Jerry?
I think it's not surprising. And here's why. One is, on one end of Android, you're talking about very cheap hardware. And cheap hardware, you know, made cheaply, fails. And on the other end, you're looking at very cutting-edge hardware, which, you know, kind of pushes the limits of what we can produce, so high failure rate.
Well, you also have one other thing to consider. You mentioned low-end and high-end. You know, think about the competition. You have 9% Windows Phone 7. Now, Windows Phone 7 is very tightly monitored by Microsoft, whereas Android is fairly open and unregulated or monitored. 8% to iPhone, Apple has a stranglehold on anything to do with an iPhone for obvious reasons. And if there was a large problem, such as the antenna on your phone not working when you held it in incorrect information, Apple would be held solely accountable. So there's some. And as for BlackBerry, RIM, you know, they who's
they've been making phones for a while.
Well, it's not just that. You have to also consider that RIM, who is their biggest customer? Businesses. Businesses demand that their devices not break. Whereas Android has a pretty even distribution between business and casual users. So I could think of several reasons why Android may have this, but even 14% is a fairly small percentage.
What? I'm looking at these numbers and going, wow, those are high.
No, I'm saying...
Basically, what this means is you take your average 10 people and one of them's going to have a busted phone. Or is going to have a phone that's just going to fail.
And it's probably mine this week.
Because you dropped it, not break because for abuse reasons. Just break due to manufacturing defects.
You mean like a phone that constantly reboots itself and can't hold a large-scale SD card because it would corrupt it, forcing the card to be formatted, possibly losing all the data?
Well, is that a hardware problem or a software problem? We're talking about hardware failures now.
I still think it's a software problem.
Well, then no, it would not count as a hardware failure.
Speaking of which, I keep hearing that Gingerbread will come for the Droid 2 Global shortly after the release of the Droid 3. Everybody...
Gingerbread is 2.3, right?
Yes.
You know, my Evo's already got 2.3.
I know, and I would flash some alternate ROM onto the Droid 2 Global, if not for the fact that the kernel, which is the part that's probably causing the problem, if anything, cannot be wiped by anybody other than Motorola, thanks to their locked bootloader. I could have solved the problem myself if they just unlocked my bootloader.
You know, you could have solved the problem in the first place by buying HTC.
How about by buying a new phone as opposed to a used phone from a man in Oregon, whom I hold no grudge against?
That's probably not his fault.
Yes, he tells me the phone was working perfectly when it left him. Anyway, I hold no grudge against the guy in Oregon. I hold him blameless for the purchase of my device. I'm sure he's happily enjoying whatever his next phone is.
And, you know, it might not be a Motorola.
Yeah, well, mine might not be a Motorola next time either.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens because, again, I don't think it's a hardware problem because the hardware, for the most part, works perfectly. But I think the problem is in the kernel. And it's the one part that cannot be replaced by anybody other than Motorola because of the lock bootloader issue. So I will wait eagerly. But if anybody would like to send good well wishes and karma in my direction, I won't complain. Send me positive energy and a Droid 2 Global SBF file for Gingerbread. Yeah. Guy can wish. And I'm told I should take my Droid 2 Global to the United Kingdom. We got a Twitter notification of that. And I am unfortunately, the person who sent it advised me that, no, if I came to the United Kingdom, I could not crash on their couch. I did ask. I figured if somebody wants me to come to the UK and they just happen to live in the UK, that they wanted me to hang around their house.
Wow.
I thought that was an invitation.
That sounds nice.
Well, just like you, Jerry, if you said, and you say it repeatedly, that Jacksonville is the most wonderful place on earth, I assume if I came to Jacksonville that you'd want to see me, and you said you would.
Yes, okay. Of course. And I would be so willing, or I would be as open, so you could crash here.
Okay.
What I'm saying.
What I want you to do is go to the door and answer it. I'm actually standing right outside.
Can you knock? The doorbell doesn't work. Yeah. Okay, so what's your point here?
Worth a shot. Anyway, just saying that I thought it was nice that somebody wanted to see me, and then I could try out the SIM card in my Droid 2 Global.
Watch out for those overage charges.
Well, if I had a SIM card, I assume I'd be paying. Also, since I own the phone, I could ask Verizon to unlock it, and then I could buy a prepaid card.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't really researched that particular issue, but I assume that if I pay Verizon a certain amount of money, that I might make it not an overage issue. Or I could just visit Canada. It's much closer, and it also is full of people who speak English. Except unless if I go to Montreal. I think I told you what happened the last time I was in Montreal.
No, not at all.
I went to a restaurant and ordered some poison, and apparently that doesn't go over well with them.
Why?
Well, it was on the menu. POISSON. Poison.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of it, actually.
What is it?
Fish.
Okay.
I am now aware that it's apparently pronounced poisson.
Yeah, whatever.
But admittedly, I don't speak French, so I took Spanish in school. Yeah. Well, I had a choice. It was either French or Spanish. I didn't have any particular connection to either language, so I flipped a coin. I took 4.5 years of Spanish, so I don't speak a word of it. I understand it. I can't speak it. But anyway, moving along, Copilot introduced Copilot Live version 9. And this week, the apps are being offered for 40 to 66% off. So if you want
to... Which means they're only, what, 60 bucks?
I think $9.99.
Wow.
Okay. But since Google Maps is supposed to introduce an offline feature, this may or may not be necessary any longer.
They do certainly make for very... I mean, the Copilots are certainly... It's very pretty.
Yes. And if you want that pretty, I suggest you get it this week when you can get it for 66% off. That's down from $30 to $10.
That is, of course, for the premium version. The standard version is on sale for $4.99.
Yes.
Or is usually $4.99 and is on sale for $2.99.
Sounds good to me. If I needed it, which I don't, so I won't. Anyway, Gate Guru for Android was released. I've been waiting for this one. They promised this to me a long time ago. What was that?
Anything that starts with Guru.
Yes. But I actually asked them about this a long time ago when they tried to convince me to try their iPhone app. Gate Guru provides comprehensive airport information, including services, maps, checkpoint wait times, etc. So I have often been stuck in an airport and wanted to know where the nearest restaurant was or the nearest toilet. And now that there's an Android app, I can find that out.
And does it use like GPS to determine where you are inside the...
I don't know. Since they released the app last week, I have not been in an airport.
Oh.
But the next time I'm in an airport, I expect to provide a great review. I do have some other apps I've been waiting to get some time to write up my review from my last trip where I tried out several travel apps, including Flight Track, Flight Board, and TripIt.
TripIt. Heard of that?
Yes. Actually, a very interesting service. You email them, and you don't need to use their Android app. They offer a website. You email them your confirmation hotel emails and your emails from the airlines, and they put it together into a nice little itinerary for you with related services. Moving along, Skype 2.0 was released for Android with two-way video calling support on a select limited number of phones. I don't know if I would want to do a video chat from my phone, but I like to know that should I wish to, the option's available to me.
Yes.
Of course, it already was with some third-party apps, but Skype is Skype.
Is Skype actually a... Are we finally gotten to the point where Skype is fully... You don't have to be on Verizon. You don't have to be on 3G. If you have an Android phone, you have a connection to the internet, then it will work.
Yes, although the video calling is still limited to certain phones.
Okay, and I can understand that.
With more coming someday. But again, while I haven't, I tested Skype when it first came out. I haven't had it installed recently because I can't necessarily see myself calling the limited number of people I talk to on Skype, namely mostly Jerry, from my phone. I suppose if I needed to, I could. But as of now, I don't live on Skype. You may have noticed, Jerry, that I'm usually only on Skype when I'm about to talk to you.
Yes.
So I don't have it on all the time. And mostly that's because the computer I use for Skype talking is not the computer I use most of the day. So I actually was explaining to somebody that if there was a way to have Skype open and then have like a telephone switch system, have it transferred if I needed a video call to the computer that has that setup, then I would find that very interesting. Sort of like a PBX type system. So I could still receive calls, I could still get voicemail, and I could still respond to the text part of it. But if I wanted to have an audio call, then it would either transfer to my home phone line, which would be interesting, or transfer to my computer. Well, not there yet. But you never know. Maybe someday. I spoke to the people at Digium about that. They had created a Skype connection to their popular product, which is an open source product, Asterisk.
Right.
And apparently that's not going to be possible for much longer. Apparently there's some sort of issue where the people at Skype have not been very cooperative of late. Even before the Microsoft thing.
Hmm.
Moving along, the Opera Mobile 11 browser was released.
Yeah, you said you tried that. What's the story with the app with the mobile browser?
Well, I actually like it. See, I've been using Dolphin browser, which I do like, but there are certain aspects of the Opera browser that have made it very compelling for me. First of all, they have a mini and a mobile version. So the mini version is designed for slow connections, and you can have them installed concurrently, and it will optimize and compress things down to make it easier for you to get it over your mobile connection, which may be an advantage should you be in a slow service area. But basically, they have a few design features. For example, the reload button and the back, the right and back button are actually on the screen at the bottom as a lower toolbar.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you press the menu button, which, of course, under Dolphin Browser would bring up a menu, what it does is it brings up the upper bar, which is the URL bar and the search bar. So it uses a very different paradigm than, let's say, Dolphin Browser. And at the bottom of the screen, there's always a big O for Opera, where if you press that, it brings up the menu.
Interesting.
So, as I said, it's a different design, and I sort of like the design. I'm not sure if it and Dolphin Browser combined, it would be very compelling. So I haven't decided if I want to stay with Opera. I'm probably going to stay with it for a little while longer to see if maybe I'll try Firefox again. And there's always, I suppose, Skyfire. I haven't tried that in a while. Last time I tried it, I didn't like it. But I think there's room on the market for other browsers. I do like also how it does window handling. Instead of having to scroll all the way up to the top and switch between the tabs,
mm-hmm.
which is the way I usually end up doing it in Dolphin Browser, there's a button at the bottom of the screen. And if you press it, it pops up a little menu bar with all of your little windows, so you can very quickly switch between them. The, of course, downside is that you give up a little real estate at the bottom of your screen, but I've never considered it a significant amount, since it's a very small strip.
Cool.
And this goes back to the discussion we had a while ago about how Android seems to be moving from, let's say, a physical button, even if it's a capacitive physical button, to removing those buttons in favor of having your buttons at the bottom of the screen, which would also allow software to change what they were. So maybe when I'm in my browser, I want a back and a forward button. So context-specific buttons.
It would be nice if those context-specific buttons were, you know, on the screen.
Yes.
So they would change the icons. You know, we've talked about this before, the soft buttons at the bottom.
Yes, and that's what it seems like Android is moving towards, to only having a physical power and volume button and having the remainder of the back, the search, the menu, and the home button actually being on the screen. And thus you could, you know, I will use a programming term, you can overload them to be something else and change the icon at the same time. I think that's a good idea.
I agree. And with that, I hate to do this, but we need to pause the program for a bit because I need to exit stage left for just a few minutes.
Okay, I will go back to the other room. Just send me a text message and I will come back in here. Do you want me to leave the computer on?
Yeah, we'll leave the connection open.
Okay, so I'm going to step into the other room where I have the air conditioning going. Don't think that it's... because if I turn it on in here, it will be too noisy. So I will pause the recording and we will pick up.
Okay, thanks, man.
Okay. So
I feel significantly better now, thank you.
Okay, let us resume the show. I believe we were talking about the Opera mobile browser.
I think we just wrapped that up, didn't we?
Okay. Well, in other news, ObscuraCam detects, blurs faces, and strips metadata from photos. So if you want to take a picture of people and blur the faces and strip out where the picture was taken, when the picture was taken, and what the picture was taken with, this is the app for you.
I could see that being useful.
Well, the metadata, I actually think, you know, by itself is useful. I have to give this a try and see if you can strip the metadata without blurring the faces. Because let's say I take a picture in my house. I don't want everybody to see where I live.
True.
I don't care if they know I took it with my Droid 2 Global or what time I took it, but I might be particularly concerned that they might know where I was. And I like it for my own personal use. I like being able to know where my pictures are if I'm on a trip. So I have no problem with that data for me, but for other people, I might want to take it out.
I believe looking at the description and the market, it appears that you can just strip the data if you want, and blurring out the faces, it's not just blur out the faces. You have, you know, some options there. You can put a big black box over it. You can pixelate it. You can kind of pixelate it, or you could put
a
mask over it.
I want to give this one a try. People keep saying that they want a picture of me for the site, so this seems like the perfect app. So I'll take a picture of myself and use ObscuraCam.
There you go.
Anyway.
Are you going to use the mask, or are you going to pixelate yourself?
I haven't decided.
That just seems funny.
I also want to try out the next item on this list, a U-Loop Studio, which is apparently a full-fledged music studio for Android. It puts me in the mind of that great application, My Soundboard.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. One of these days, I'll review that thing.
Dear Lord.
Yeah, well. That reminds me, speaking of that, we were discussing at one point the possibility of an app to do Bluetooth button and other testing.
Yes.
Okay. Have you ever had a chance to play with that?
I have not.
Okay, I hope you do at some point, because I would be very interested.
Okay.
Okay. Moving along, the Merriam-Webster Dictionary app has hit the market.
Yes, because the internet's not enough.
Yes, when you need a dictionary, you need the Merriam-Webster Dictionary. Unfortunately, I don't know a good word to describe that because I didn't download the Merriam-Webster Dictionary.
You know, when I was growing up, did your dad ever do this? You ask your dad how to spell something, and he says, go look it up.
Did I mention that I come from a family of teachers? Asking my parents something meant that I usually received a rather long lecture on it.
Okay, yeah, and my dad was the same way, but it was often how to find the information instead of just the information.
Which I think is more useful in the long run.
I agree. And behind me, I still have the big, honking, white dictionary that I used to look stuff up in when I was a child.
Is it the Oxford English Dictionary?
No, it's not.
Well, I did have a copy of that until recently, but I got rid of it due to mold.
Huh.
Well, I always kept it on the bottom shelf, and I had that flood a few months ago.
Right.
Anyway, let's see what else we have here. Trendroid, a popular torrent download manager for Android, was pulled from the market.
Well, that'll probably help with the overage charges.
Hopefully. There's a new app coming out, the CSI Virtual MasterCard app, which is apparently going to launch in July. So if you're not happy with any of the other ways to pay with your mobile device, now MasterCard wants to get in on the action there.
So what's with the CSI?
I'm not sure. I really have to look that up. I forgot what that acronym is actually supposed to stand for. I'm reasonably certain it's not crime scene investigations. Uber Music Beta, a new music player from the creator of Launcher Pro, is now available in a public beta, thus the name Uber Music Beta. But then again, Launcher Pro was a beta product for a long time, and people consider it to be one of the best launchers out there. So if you look at, you know, I tried out Uber Music Beta, it looks very interesting. Maybe that guy can give some pointers to the people at Muzone. Or even better, there's an API for Muzone. Maybe he can write a better client. I should write him a letter. Anyway, that brings us to Developer's Corner.
Okay, Developer's Corner. Yes, there is a Developer's Corner this week.
Yes, and we are very excited. Are you going to perform the theme music that you used to use? It's been so long, do you remember what the theme music was?
Well, I think things have stabilized a little bit, so I remember what it used to be.
Okay. So you're not going to do anything?
It used to be. But I'm really not sure it's that way anymore.
Well, I did try that, you know, fancy music that somebody sent us.
Yeah.
But you, I thought you preferred performing the music yourself. Okay. Well, that reminds me, speaking of music, now that you've performed it, before I forget, this episode is being released a day late due to American Independence Day, which occurred yesterday. So those of you who are American or appreciate it from afar, happy 4th of July. Hopefully you enjoyed some fireworks and didn't blow yourself up or any of your limbs or loved ones. Hopefully you had some sort of traditional burnt meat, or should you be a vegetarian, burnt something else. And let's do it all again next year.
I had a good time.
Well, what did you do, Jerry? I know you weren't here with me recording a podcast. So you must have been somewhere else.
No, I and my family went down to the beach to watch the fireworks. And it was a good old time.
Oh.
It was the first time normally here in Jacksonville, we'll go downtown to watch the fireworks. And, you know, they shoot them up from barges from the middle of the river.
Yeah, we do that here too.
And that's cool and everything. But going out and watching them shoot up over the ocean was pretty cool.
Well, I stayed here. I actually, after much debate and an unfortunate choice in the afternoon of activities, I decided to acquire a copy of the classic Independence Day movie 1776, which airs every year on the Turner Classic Movie Channel.
Hmm.
I am a big fan of that. Some years ago, I actually saw when they had a revival of it, the new Broadway cast, which was led by Brent Spiner. Have you heard of him?
No.
He used to be on Star Trek. Okay. Anyway, so I have always been a fan of 1776 and of its composer, Peter Stone. Or, no, excuse me, he was the writer. But he also wrote the script for one of my favorite classic movies, The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3.
Ugh.
You don't like that movie?
Yeah, it was not.
Not the new one, the original.
Oh, no. See, I'm not a real... I don't tend to watch old movies.
Excuse me, it has Walter Matthau in it. How can you not like a movie where Walter Matthau plays the hero and the bad guy is played by Robert Shaw from Jaws?
Okay.
Anyway, it also has Jerry Stiller, Doris Roberts, Hector Elizondo, Martin Balsam, Earl Hyndman. Good cast. Some of those people you may have actually heard of.
It's conceivable. Not likely.
I bet you've seen some of them.
Okay.
Anyway, great movie. I am a big fan of it. It has a lot of classic humorous lines. And 1776 is an equally good movie, which is a humorous and musical telling of the signing of the Declaration of Independence.
Humorous, you say?
Yes. A lot of great jokes. Yes. There's especially that great line where John Adams expresses his annoyance that he will not be remembered by the history books. And then, of course, some great musical numbers. I love a good musical number. In honor of July 4th, I will now perform the entirety of 1776 from start to beginning from memory.
I'm going to go to sleep now. Wake me when you're done.
I'm kidding.
Oh, okay. Can we do a developer's corner now? Do you mind? Is that okay with you?
That is okay with me. I just wanted to build the suspense.
Suspense. Actually, I have two items I'd like to talk about for developer's corner.
We have time. I cleared extra time so that we would be able to do the developer's corner and the recorded interview with the spin doctor.
The spin doctor. Okay. Well, I'll try and get to them quick. I don't want to, you know, bog people down. But basically, okay, and we've never really figured out a format for developer's corner that I feel comfortable with, but I'm going to try this again. Okay. So, Guru, you know, there's stuff that happens on your phone that an app that is installed may want to know about. Things like you're getting a phone call.
Yeah, I'd imagine an app might want to know about that.
Well, these things are events, right? And they get broadcast. And apps can register to receive these broadcasts so that they know when these things happen.
Well, I think if I were an app, I'd want to know there was a phone call coming in. Especially if I was an app that relied on data or sound.
Good point. Things like, hey, there's a Bluetooth connection available or whatever. One of the broadcast events that is available for you is boot completed. You know, if you have an application that needs to do something when the phone starts up, then boot completed could be a broadcast that interests you, right?
Yes, I recently heard something about this. There was an article somewhere, wasn't there? About boot completed. So you must have read this article and understood it more than I did.
Well,
as a developer, of course.
The thing is, you can register for these broadcast events and inside your manifest. So Android, your phone doesn't actually have to run your application to know what broadcast events you're interested in. Well, starting with Android version 3.1, the boot completed broadcast event.
Yes.
Your app will not actually receive it if it's never been run. So let's say that you download an application that wants to respond to the boot completed. In your current phone, if you just download the app, install it, turn your phone off, and turn it back on, then that application will receive the boot completed event.
Okay.
Well, starting in version 3.1, it will not receive that event unless you've already run it.
And what is the rationale for this design change?
There's not one. Some people are calling it a bug. Some people are calling it a regression. Personally, I think it's perfectly acceptable behavior.
I think it's...
Either way, it's a mismatch between what the docs say and what the actual behavior is. But I think it's perfectly reasonable for an application to not start getting events until after you, the user, have initiated the application.
Yeah, I would have gone with initialized. Initializing a variable.
Yeah. Well, in this case, you run the thing. Yeah. And when it runs, then Android says, okay, you're registered for this event now.
And I think that makes sense. What if you have to set up settings?
Yep.
An app run if it's in an imperfect state.
Or maybe it's something that you didn't install on purpose.
Also a good thought.
So
you have many good ideas.
I personally like the new behavior, but it does apparently break some applications and people are upset about it. It's it's something to be aware of if you do depend on the boot completed broadcast. Just your application won't get it until after it's run the first time.
And I like to run applications. Otherwise, I won't know what they do. I'm not going to wait for a reboot.
Yep.
Okay. So that was number one. You said you had number two?
Yeah, this next one, I just wanted to talk about the whole development of applications in general, and that you may not need to have an application that is full bore activities and broadcast receivers and et cetera. Think about what your app does, and if you can do your app in and if it's something that could be done in a browser, then you might be better off doing it in a browser.
What would you say is something that would be better off in a browser?
Something like, well, when I say could be done in a browser, what I mean is something that is mostly displaying information, retrieving information, something like a Facebook app. Or have you ever used, I mean, you're driving now. Have you ever used GasBuddy?
A few times.
I like GasBuddy, but it doesn't really need to be an app. It could be a normal web page that you could host inside of an app body so that you get access to the GPS coordinates, etc.
Okay.
But basically the whole HTML5 thing I wanted to bring up was local storage and SQLite. And if you're a developer or an Android, you're familiar with SQLite.
I'm familiar with it, and I'm not a developer of Android. I understand the concept.
There you go. Those are available. And from 2.1 on, local storage and SQLite are available in the browser. So you could have an app that is basically just a container for the browser and save yourself a lot of development time. Just saying.
Okay.
You know, maybe it won't work for whatever you're doing, but, you know, it could be worth the time to think about if it is possible.
And that's certainly food for thought.
Thought for food. Hey, food for thought. We're a buffet. You made a pun and I didn't get it.
No, you didn't.
Well, not until later.
Okay. Don't worry. I tell this joke every week and no one ever gets it. I go into work at the end of my work week and say, I'm very tired. I think I won't come to work tomorrow. And most people do not get this.
Wow. You work with a bunch of dense people, don't you?
Apparently so. Only one person instantly got it when I said it. I made it a point to say it more than once to people who took a long time to get it to see if they'll get it the second or third time. But anyway, at the end of the week, I need a little levity in my life.
Don't we all?
Yes.
Maybe we should do this podcast at the end of the week and provide our listeners with some levity.
Well, you have to understand that the end of the week and the beginning of the week are very close to each other. There's usually only one day difference between the end of the week and the beginning of the week, if you want to be literal about it. Occasionally, there are 2 days in between, which we call the weekend. Yes. Anyway, jokes aside, let's go over a few places where you can find us, should you wish to do so.
Alrighty.
You can, of course, send us an email.
That's email.
podcast@androidbuffet.com. You can also use the Contact Us form on the website, should you wish to
contact
send us.
Contact form.
You can tweet us at Android Buffet or individually Twitter. At Jerry_Jones or at Gadget Wisdom. You can, of course, send us a voicemail by dialing 1-201-2-WENECA. That's WENECA. And it is called that because we are a project of the Weneca Media Group, creators of fine quality online content. And, of course, we are also a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Or it's there, since we're here. And you can check out more.
We're here, and it's here, so...
Yeah, they're here with us.
They're here, so here is... Here.
So you can continue to check out many fine programs on that network, which when I get a chance and go and preview some programs, I'll tell you what I think is a fine program. I'm sure they're all wonderful. I just haven't seen all of them yet. One only has so much time. All of you who are members of the Tech Podcast Network, if you'd like to write me and tell me your program is extra wonderful so I can remember to tell people about it, feel free. That goes for anybody who wants us to talk about anything. We're always willing to listen. That doesn't mean we'll agree with you, but that always means we're willing to listen. That said, you can also donate to us. We accept PayPal on our donate page. We also accept Amazon gift cards, which allows us to go out and buy toys, which makes Jerry smile. Jerry likes toys. Anyway, immediately following the end of this program will be another one of my roving reporter interviews, this time with the Spin Doctor.
Sounds like fun.
I will eventually get better at my roving reporting, and I need to practice. So if you'd like me to interview you in my role as the quote-unquote roving reporter, you're welcome to do so. Meanwhile, if the Spin Doctor is listening, you have 49 more episodes to get through before you're caught up. I'm here with the Spin Doctor from StockSpinoffs.com, another proud member of the Weneka Media Group, and he has a new addition to his family. Would you like to tell us about it, Spin Doctor?
Hello, Guru. I do have a new addition to the family. It's my new Motorola Droid X2.
And will you be using this to write new and exciting articles for your website, StockSpinoffs.com?
Oh, yeah. I plan on, staying abreast of the news, maybe even starting a Twitter feed, my first smartphone, or at least personal smartphone. So I'm ready to make that leap and hopefully grow Stock Spinoffs will benefit as well.
Did you know that there is a WordPress app for Android that you could use to write directly into the blog?
I did not know that. Thank you.
Now that you know this information, will you be using it and installing it right now as we speak?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Very exciting. Do you have any other comments or anything you'd like to tell the listeners of Android Buffet about your new droid?
Very cool. Everyone says the iPhone, very cool. That's why you should get it. I got to say, I'm loving this X2. Tons of functionality. I have no idea. I got to listen to catch up on my Android Buffet, to make sure I'm getting the full use out of this device, and I look forward to catching up and learning more about how to use this to the best ability.
Well, this is being recorded before our next episode, but this is going to be included in our next episode, which will be episode 50, which is our 51st episode.
That's so you a have lot to catch up.
You have almost a year's worth of episodes to get through. Yes. What I want you to do is start listening and tell me what your favorite episode is and who your favorite guest is.
Well, let me ask you a question. What would you recommend is the first thing, the best thing I should know about this new device?
Whatever you want to do, most of the time, somebody has written an app for it. Thus the expression, which I believe is now copyrighted, there's an app for that.
And supposedly, there are a lot more free apps on the Android market than there are on the competitor market.
Here's the question. If an app offers good functionality, would you pay money for it? Do you believe in rewarding people? I can understand having a preference for free, but do you believe that developers occasionally deserve, they get revenue from ads, of course, deserve your money for their work?
Definitely. But if I can get something for free, I will always take it for free. But look, sometimes if you need something and you gotta be willing to pay for it. That's why I always say quality, you gotta pay for quality generally.
And I want to thank you today for speaking to me, Spin Doctor. And again, tell people where they can find you.
www.stockspinoffs.com, where you can find all the latest news regarding any potential spinoff investments.
And we'll cut back over to the present, where myself and my co-host are probably still talking.
All right, thank you.
And that brings us to the end of our program. Now that I've given that cheery thought of the 50 hours of entertainment that the Spin Doctor is looking forward to now that he has an Android device, which hopefully is working by now. Do you have any final thoughts for our listeners, Jerry, before we bid them a fine and fond au revoir?
I don't speak that French stuff.
To meet again. We could do a nice duet of Happy Trails.
We could.
Yes.
Or we could not.
Okay.
How about we just say goodbye and let these good folk get on with their lives? Thanks for listening, folks.
See you next week.